Very good day to you all. Welcome back. It is, of course, Monday or Tuesday or even perhaps Wednesday if you're listening slightly later in the week. But this is Marca's Eye on the Liga podcast for Marca in English, bringing you all the latest Spanish footballing news and views. I'm your host, Ollie Wilson. And just when you thought the footballing world couldn't take any more twists and turns in Spain, refereeing decisions rear their ugly head once again in the Villarreal-Real Madrid game, and Barcelona get a win at the Vicente Calderón to pull themselves back into the title race and perhaps sink Atletico Madrid's La Liga hopes for any sort of a title challenge, as if they weren't dead already. Joining me on the show, as always, are two of the finest minds, and back from the extra time slot that we did last week, Simon Harrison and Ewan McTeer joining me on the show. Simon, how you doing, mate? Pleasure to speak to you once again.
Yeah, you too. Not too bad. I mean, after another rewritten Real Madrid match report, what else is there to say, really?
Yeah, another scramble after 85 minutes or so to rechange it all and put it down as a Los Blancos victory. What about you, Ewan? Anything too drastic over the weekend, or all nice and running smooth, I suppose?
Yeah, it was a big one. Lots of big games, lots of big important late goals, and I think La Liga Lands weekend was as packed with late drama and comebacks as La La Lands weekend, so it was exciting.
Well, I'm afraid there's no Oscars for any sort of jokes on this show, mate.
I'll try next week.
You'll have to leave the humour elsewhere. We were already talking about humour, of course, and how difficult Spanish humour is to get, and Ewan's humour is a touch harder than written Spanish humour as well. Let's get into Atletico Madrid against Barcelona then from Saturday at the Vicente Calderón. A game that you really felt Atletico Madrid were desperate to try and get a victory in for a last victory against Barca on home soil. Wasn't the case. Lionel Messi once again. I mean, how many times do we have to say it this year, in 2017, in this season in general, that Barcelona saved once again after a shoddy performance, some saying, by a Lionel Messi late strike to give them 3 points, give them a victory, and to heap more pressure on Real Madrid before their Sunday evening encounter against Villarreal. Wasn't the best Barcelona performance. Some criticism, Simon, from the showing from Luis Enrique's side, but getting the job done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was quite as desperate as scoring a late penalty was for Messi, but at least this time there was a sort of pressure that built up. First half, I really still don't understand how Atletico didn't manage to pull themselves one or two goals in front. The back three, I think it was kind of meant to protect, and it didn't really do its job all too well, but fortunately for Barca, Simeone's side couldn't take their chances. And then I think second half they did improve quite a lot, and it wasn't quite the same as usual. It wasn't that the goal has appeared from nowhere. There was some pressure behind it. Obviously, the manner of both Rafinha and Messi's goals, they were quite fortunate. A bit of pinball in the box involved in both of them. But I think this should be seen more as a performance where they've kind of dug out a good result, and it's the side of a team who can do better, as opposed to a team that's just completely failing.
I mean, that's always the kind of discussion and the talking point around these sorts of games. Some people will say this is the mark of a champion. You're not playing well and you're still able to claw out a result. Others will say that, and have said, that this is still a sign of Barcelona's kind of continuing demise. The fact that they had a really shoddy victory against this Atletico Madrid side, and even Simeone coming out and saying he really didn't feel his side deserved to lose that one in any way, shape or form, Ewan. Which side of the coin are you on this one?
Yeah, Barcelona's a unique club, I think we all know that, and they've become, I think, so used to winning that even when they're winning badly, that's now a problem, because it has to be done with style, it has to be done the Barcelona way, and whenever it is one of these scrappy wins away at one of the trickiest away grounds in Spain, if they didn't play well, then people are still going to be upset. And again, they didn't, as Simon pointed out, they didn't play brilliantly, they were a little bit lucky, and when you look at it, including the Copa del Rey tie, Atletico have probably been better than Barcelona for the last five halves of football that they've played. They were better in this game, they were better in the Camp Nou second leg, and they turned it around in the first half of that first leg in the cup. But again, Messi is just the one that's popped up, and a little bit fortunate with his goal, but he scored the winner in this league game, and then he blasted in that rocket in the opening half of the Copa game to send them on their way. So when you have him in the side, you can always pick out a win from somewhere, and it's better to be lucky than good, as they say, and not everyone at the Camp Nou will agree with that, but it's kept them in the title race, and they have to be pleased.
Will it be a result, as Luis Enrique has said, that will reinstill confidence into this Barcelona side? And it's a Barca side that has looked like it's lacked confidence, or at least been indifferent with its confidence in the last few weeks or so.
Yeah, it could do.
I think
but
it's
then,
quite tough to say because...
Yeah, it could do, but then going out the Champions League in a couple of weeks to PSG might be a blow. Even if they win that game on the night, I mean, going out of the last 16 is surely going to sap away some confidence. So it could give them a little bit of a boost, but you do feel there's another setback just around the corner. Sorry, Simon, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the same. I think the only person whose confidence has really been boosted by this whole run has been Ter Stegen. I think there's an argument for him probably being one of the better Barcelona players since the turn of the year. And it's more often than not his saves that are kind of proving to be a defining moment in games where Barcelona leave themselves in really vulnerable positions. So I think he's going to just keep going from strength to strength. He's getting a lot of practice, after all. But aside from that, I think they need a little bit of something else. And as Ewan says, the fact that they do go out of PSG, which is likely, then maybe it makes it more of a reality in the fans' minds that they're not going to be competing in that competition anymore. And that could also have a detrimental effect on the rest of the campaign.
What about the switch, just finally, before we have a look at Atleti's remainder of the season and their reaction to this game? The switch, this 3-4-3, it's not the very first time that we've seen Barca operate this system. But is it one that has legs, has a future, and is perhaps that second option that Luis Enrique has been accused of lacking in the past?
Yeah, this one was a little bit different to the one he's used before. And he sort of had Neymar as the one that was doing a lot of the tracking back rather than Digne, which he did well. But then it was sort of a four-man defence when they were defending, which sort of left Sergio Roberto having to play central midfield and right back at the same time, which... he'd been struggling enough as it was to play at right back, and obviously that's not his natural position, but to ask him to play two was a big ask, and you know he did a decent job of it. But yeah, you do wonder if this is something we'll see again, or if this was just a specific tactic for one of the toughest fixtures that they had left.
And Atleti are always tough for Barcelona. It'd be disappointing for the fan base in particular to have not got one last game over the Catalan giants at the Vicente Calderon. Do you agree with the idea Simeone said, you know, certainly doesn't feel that there was a deserved victory for Barcelona in any way, shape or form? Is there any sort of sympathy at all? It's this Atleti side that just got some confidence back after the big win against Leverkusen last week in the Champions League as well.
I don't think there was any real way that Luis Enrique could convincingly say that his team deserved the 3 points. I think probably a draw would have been fair. But, I mean, in football, if you don't take your chances, then you run the risk of being found out at the end. And Atletico really should have put Barcelona to the sword in the first half when they weren't really getting out, apart from counter-attacks, all that much. And I think there can't be too many complaints when you're not putting the ball in the back of the net. They even had to resort to one of their old trademarks, which was a Godin header from a corner. And really, it was disappointing because Griezmann and Gamero, they did so well in the midweek against Leverkusen, and they just couldn't quite translate that into getting a good early goal that would really have set Atletico on their way to what would then have probably been a win in their last game at the Calderon against Barcelona in the league.
And in terms of their La Liga season now, I mean, what's the best bet that Atleti can realistically hope for? Do they have to make sure they just don't stumble too far as they look at Champions League glory for the remainder of the season? Because if the Champions League doesn't come through, it's an incredibly difficult competition to win, of course. There is a danger that they might just get pipped outside the top four and not be in Europe's elite club competition for next season.
Yeah, that's exactly what Gabby said after the game was, you know, now they have to keep looking ahead. But he also said, you know, we need to be careful. We're only 1 point ahead of fifth place, which is Real Sociedad, and he's dead right. They have to watch their backs a bit, and they can't. They really can't take their foot off the gas if there's a big Champions League game coming up, because they'll really need to fight for this Champions League spot. They can still target third place, and for Atletico, they almost really need that third place, because as we saw with Villarreal last year, the qualifiers aren't ever easy, and Villarreal were paired with Monaco, and if Atletico were given a similarly tough draw, they could find themselves out in the qualifier, and they also have their stadium move coming up, and it would be logistically a lot simpler if they didn't have to fit in a home game before the new stadium's ready, but once they've sort of finished up with the old one. So yeah, third place has, I think, got to be the target, but with Sevilla 7 points ahead of them, it's going to be a tricky one. They do get to welcome Sevilla to the Calderon before the season's done, and Sevilla have a slightly trickier remaining fixture list, but yeah, it's going to be tricky to claw back those 7 points now.
And they'll have to acclimatise and get settled to their new surroundings and not be in the fortress of the Vicente Calderon. Atletico Madrid, of course. Let's take a quick break here on the show. When we come back, let's have a quick chat about Villarreal and Los Blancos, although I imagine it's not going to be very quick at all. That coming back up here on Eye on the Ring. Guys, the victory for Barcelona put plenty of pressure then going into Sunday evening on Real Madrid and Zinedine Zidane's side. And my goodness, didn't they almost crumble underneath it? I'm just going to read you something here. It's an email that we sent. I'm not going to say who's written it. You two might be able to guess, but we won't say on air. Real have been very, in all capital letters, lucky this weekend. Never a penalty in a million years. Absolute game changer.
Now, was that from Gerard Piqué? Was that Piqué writing then?
Yeah, another one of his conspiracy theories coming up here from Piqué. But there might be some grounds to it. An absolutely shocking decision to award Real Madrid a penalty late on. Bruno Soriano called for handball, which many people feel was an incorrect decision in that game. Real Madrid coming back from behind to win 3-2 in the end. A real nail-biter, real heartbreak for Villarreal in a game that they worked very hard to assert themselves in and have that 2-1 advantage, especially after the disappointment of dropping out of the Europa League in midweek. Real Madrid, I mean, it sums it up really, hasn't it? They have been very, very lucky this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of argue that, again, it's the mark of a great team and things like that, but they really did need Isco and Alvaro Morata to be introduced from the bench to kind of change things a little bit. It's been, I think, the same kind of story for the last few weeks. They're kind of gambling on putting a lot of balls into the box. Zidane admitted after the game as well that he put Morata in and basically told him just to stay in the area, challenge for anything in the air that he could. And there's always a risk of that approach not quite coming off, especially when you've got teams such as Villarreal, which have got really mean defensive records. I don't know whether, obviously, a mention goes for Sergio Asenjo, who obviously suffered that fourth ligament injury of his career. He's only 27, which is just staggering. But I don't know, maybe Villarreal would have had a better chance if they'd put Bruno in goal after he'd gone off injured, because he's been having quite a few important handball incidents in the last few months.
For Real, I mean, it's another refereeing decision that does go their way. But Ewan, we've spoken about it a lot. There has been some discussion as well about the officials leaving with Real Madrid bags leaving the stadium by Villarreal president Fernando Riog. It seems to always go their way, doesn't it?
It does do, but I think when we've spoken about this before, we've always said, you know, let's wait until the end of the season before we tally it up, if there even is a need to tally it up, which with Barcelona and Real Madrid fans, there always will be. But yeah, I mean, they've had a few fortuitous decisions so far this season and a few really big ones. But that's not to say that Barcelona haven't had some as well. It might just be that they've not come at as quite as decisive moments. Yeah, the Bruno one, as Gerard Piqué was pointing out on Twitter, it was against Villarreal that Real Madrid benefited, and against Barcelona when Barcelona played Villarreal that Barcelona felt they were hard done by, and it was with the same player in this, Bruno, with his handballs, as Simon mentioned. And when you look at two incidents that are almost the same incident, and one team gets a penalty and one doesn't, it's very easy to think that it's going Real Madrid's way. But we have to remember there's another, you know, a whole league of teams out there, and there's a whole 38 matches in the season. So to compare them just based on their trips to Villarreal is maybe not the best way to do so.
Does Spanish football have to look at its officiating, though, now? I mean, it's countless times, almost every week, it crops up. And it seems to crop up in big games at both the top and bottom of the table as well. Whether you can argue there's a bias or not to one side or not, and I think personally all of us on the show probably don't think that there is actually a bias towards Real Madrid from the officials, despite the alleged Real Madrid bags and merchandise leaving with them on Sunday. But do you not think that actually the number of decisions we're now talking about, it needs to be looked at on a base level and changed in some way, shape or form?
Yeah, I think that what's happening with players, outspoken players such as PK on Twitter, I think it's almost discrediting the fact that there needs to be a serious discussion about the level of officiating in Spain, because it isn't just these top two teams that are, you know, losing out. There are, as Ewan said, a whole league of other teams who are suffering from some poor decisions. And really, by saying that there's a conspiracy, it kind of just discredits the whole idea that there needs to be a look into the standard of refereeing, and there needs to be a look into the fact that these things are, they're far too regular. Like, we shouldn't need to be basically allotting 10 minutes on this podcast every week to talk about what they've done wrong this week. So I think it's just important that obviously PK can have his opinions and he can think whatever he likes to think, but when it all comes down to it, there needs to be a discussion that isn't on Twitter, that's done by those in charge of the officials, to really just knuckle down and see what the consistent errors are.
And in terms of Real Madrid then going forward, they seem to have two players that they can rely on to get themselves out of holes. You talk about Cristiano Ronaldo and Gareth Bale, who of course on the score sheet this week, but the two players that seem to score vital goals for Real Madrid, and one of them scores them at every club he seems to be at, Alvaro Morata and Sergio Ramos. Ramos, of course, not on the score sheet this week, but Morata getting the winner 7 minutes from time. When they've needed a goal, one of those two players has seemed to crop up more often than not this season. It's such a great reliance that Zidane has in his locker. We've spoken about the depth in this squad before, but having also players that can just rise to the very big last-ditch occasion, it's a huge, huge asset for Zidane.
Yeah, I mean, this team has goals in it all throughout, as you say it. I think in the Valencia loss last midweek, when Ronaldo called Keylor Navas up, if Navas had scored, I think he would have been the 23rd player to score for Real Madrid this season, which is just, that's just ridiculous. I think every outfield player other than Contrao has scored a goal, and it's been that way for about 2 or 3 months. And yeah, they have goals from the bench with Morata, they have goals from the back with Ramos. Ronaldo's still scoring, maybe not as he has done in previous seasons, but he's still scoring plenty of goals. Now that Bale's back, he's got a goal and 2 goals already. And it's, they just find goals from all sorts of players, from all kinds of positions. Even Toni Kroos popping up with a couple of, you know, long-range passes into the bottom corner. Every player seems to be able to score when it matters. And that's maybe the difference between them and Barcelona, where Barcelona are relying on Messi, who's having one of his best seasons ever. But when Messi doesn't score, sometimes, I mean, it was interesting to see this weekend Rafinha pop up with a vital goal. But other than that, they've not really had that many players as Real Madrid getting on the score sheet.
In terms of Madrid and that strike force, do you think there's ever been a point when they've regretted perhaps going with Benzema over Higuain, not keeping Higuain around, just because you see him in Italy at the moment in the Champions League, he's banging in the goals. He's a guaranteed centre-forward. And while it's great having players that can come off the bench like Morata and get goals, and obviously you've always got goals in Cristiano Ronaldo and Bale and an abundance of goal scorers in general throughout the squad, do you think Madrid would feel a little more settled if they had somebody that was almost guaranteed in that centre-forward role to be banging in, you know, 28, 29 goals in all competitions at minimum, like Higuain has been doing at Napoli and at Juventus in Italy?
I think hindsight's sort of a beautiful thing, in terms of the fact that maybe when Higuain left, it was just generally thought that Benzema would be the best option to go forward with. And I think last season Benzema was very good. He scored an important goal in the Champions League this season against Napoli. And it's a tough one, I think, because both of them have got their qualities. And obviously now it's easier to point at Higuain and say he's the more prolific striker. And I think they should almost just ignore that fact altogether, because it probably hurt a bit. And instead, there needs to be the discussion of whether it's going to be Morata or Benzema. And for me personally, I think that Isco has offered so much in recent games in behind a striker that maybe Zidane could maybe sort of toy with playing almost like a 4-2-3-1 with keeping Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo out wide, but then maybe having Isco playing a little bit closer to Morata or maybe Benzema. But Morata, he's obviously the La Liga player who scored the most goals as a substitute in all competitions this season. And I think there's got to be a point where it comes to thinking, well, he's proven himself from the bench, so let's give him more of an opportunity from the very off. And I'm not sure that Benzema is doing enough to dissuade Zidane from doing just that soon.
What about Villarreal's strike force, just finally, before we move on and go further down the league and look at the likes of Voro's Valencia, that one minute are fantastic and the next minute aren't. But in terms of that centre-forward role, massive to get Soldado back. Got his first start, really, this season since getting injured in the pre-season and missing the majority of the campaign in the week against Roma in Rome in the Europa League. How big is it to get him back? Obviously, the Pato's departed already from Villarreal, just to strengthen that forward line. Defensively, they've been excellent. Obviously, conceding three isn't great on the weekend. But how good is it to get Soldado back once again? Just gives them a few more attacking options.
Yeah, it really will be. I mean, they've only scored 32 goals this season in their 24 games, and they're in the top six. So that shows you just how well the defence has been doing. But now with Fernandes having to play in goal, and we saw with Morata's goal, and he maybe should have saved that one at the weekend. It could be tricky now with a backup goalie for the rest of the season, and they'll need someone to get them on the score sheet, because they're not going to have as many clean sheets at the other end. And yeah, as you mentioned, with Pato going, there's been this sort of gap between the Soldado returning and Pato leaving, and they haven't had the best form during that time. So they'll really need him to step up. And it was nice as well to see Bakambu getting a goal as well, because he's not had maybe as prolific a season as many thought he would after such a good end to last year.
Be interesting to see then what happens with Villarreal for the final run of the season. Very much in the mix to try and secure themselves that Europa League spot once again after crashing out against Roma in the first knockout stage this year. Perhaps though a little too far adrift to even think about anything like a Champions League spot. Let's go further down the league when we come back after this quick break. Let's take a look at the results for Valencia and, of course, a managerial change as well is abound as Deportivo La Coruña continue to slide down the table. And then today, it has been announced that their head coach, Gaizka Garitano, has been removed from his position. More on that when we come back here. Welcome back to the show. Let's get down the bottom end of the league. And let's start with the breaking news from Deportivo La Coruña. Gaizka Garitano removed after a torrid run of form for Deportivo La Coruña has been circling the drop zone in that relegation battle. But we thought that was just three teams done. That's hold my head up everywhere, keep myself out on this train. Boy, one of you got it spot on here.
I think with what Garitano has said after, you know, facing the sack, he said that the club are looking for sort of like a kickstart, like something to get their season going, and they really, really do need it. Obviously, they have got the game in hand, which could propel them a little further up the table, which would maybe make things look quite a bit rosier, actually. But with Leganés winning at the weekend against them and in such convincing fashion, mixed in with the fact that Sporting Gijón, they really should have picked up 3 points, but a red card and a poor last 20 minutes really threw it away for them. Granada, they've looked better under Lucas Alcaraz, and Osasuna, even though they are cut adrift, they have shown a little bit of promise under Vasiljevic. So out of all of those bottom teams,
they're the one that stands out, that needed a change. They need something different. And you can obviously point to Malaga and see Marcelo Romero and say, well, it took him forever to sort of get his first win and to get things going. But I think Depor are at the stage of the season where they might need to take that risk.
Defensively, have been astonishingly poor, conceding four, as you say, on the weekend. They conceded three against Eibar, two against Bilbao. But scoring goals has been a massive problem as well. Since the turn of the calendar year, they've only scored two goals in one game. Lost their last four, of course, as well, in all competitions. It's just been really, really torrid to watch them go. Ewan, I know you've got an opinion on this, though. Was it the right decision to be made at this time in the season?
Yeah, I think if, as Simon's saying, if you're looking for a kickstart, then, you know, it could provide that. But I don't really think anyone that's coming in is going to be able to have much better luck, because he's not really had a great time of it. You mentioned there that they've struggled to score goals, and that really has been a problem all season. But you have to look, I think, at the board as well. And they sold Lucas Perez to Arsenal at the start of the season, didn't have time to replace him. And then Ryan Babel, who came in as a free agent, he was having a fantastic first half of the season, sold him as well in January, again, didn't really replace him. And he's been left with Florin Andoni up front, and you can only rely on one player for so long. So it's been hard for them to get much going in attack, but I don't really think that's maybe the coach's fault. I think that's just a lack in the squad. I mean, you look at last season, Deportivo relied so heavily on Perez that it was always going to be difficult to replace him, and so it's proven. As you mentioned, defensively, they did let in four goals in this Leganés game, but I think that was the first time in the last several months, maybe since they played Barcelona 4-0 and lost 4-0, that they've really been comfortably beaten. They've lost a lot of games by one goal, which, you know, doesn't help. You don't want to lose by any goals. But against Leganés, they actually, I think, watching the game, they had some of the better chances, and Leganés just, they put on a finishing masterclass. I mean, if you've not seen these goals, you need to go and look them up. I mean, some of the crosses into the box and volleys from tight angles, and Leganés just decided to score this weekend, which really cost Gary Tannell his job in this sort of Gary Tannell derby against Asier Gary Tannell. But I do feel it was a little bit of a harsh decision, because I don't really know what more he could have done with the attacking players that he's got in the squad.
So rumoured to come in to replace is Pepe Mel, former West Bromwich Albion manager, of course, former Betis manager as well. Has been out of management, though, I think since around about last January or so. It's a fair bit of time away from the game. In terms of Pepe Mel, I mean, he's experienced with La Liga. He knows how to scrap down at the bottom of the table. And at times with previous Betis sides, you know, he's played some very attractive football. Is he the right man to come in, though? And if not Mel, who else is there?
I mean, I think at this stage of the season, I'm sort of struggling to come up with any alternatives. Mel was rumoured he was quite heavily linked with the Granada job at the time, but they went for Lucas Alcaraz. And, well, he's known for being a nice guy, but I don't know whether being a nice guy is enough to sort of pull Depor out of this stupor that they find themselves in. I mean, I just think a new face, sort of regardless of what they're... what they're going to do might be what they need, because as Ewan said, it's been quite tight in quite a few games, and they just need a little bit of something different to maybe look at this squad just in a different way. Maybe Garitano, he looked at the squad and thought, well, I'm persevering with this system, it's all I can see that's going to get results from watching them in training every day, this is my set 11. And maybe it just needs a new pair of eyes to come in and just impose what they think might be best given the sort of scarce resources that Depor have, as we sort of tick down towards what's going to probably involve a relegation battle.
Do you think they're a savable side, this Depor side? Many people have said that the squad, as Ewan touched on earlier, is just not good enough in terms of its depth and the quality, and it's lost too much quality in the last year or so. Is it a side good enough to try and stay up, or do you think they are destined to slip regardless of what happens managerially?
I think that with Depor, obviously losing Lucas Perez is the biggest problem. Andone can try and, you know, steer the ship by himself, but he's going to need a bit more help than that. Hossolu's been injured. Obviously, I thought that when he came back and scored against Real Madrid, I thought that might be, you know, like a new dawn almost for Depor. I think Emre Colak, he's a useful player. They've got some direct sort of runners. They've got Kakuta, who can blow hot or cold. Moreno, he's raw, but he's got a little bit of something about him. But I mean, with Celso Borges being one of their, you know, higher goal scorers for the season, it doesn't really look too good in my eyes.
Depor just 2 points off the relegation spots now, Sporting Gijón just below them. Depor do have a game in hand though over the bottom three. Granada on 16 points. Osasuna though, you feel certainly cut adrift, especially after their loss this weekend, and it's perhaps all too much now for La Liga's bottom club. Just finally, guys, a topic I love to talk, a bit of Valencia. Not because I'm a Valencia fan or anything like that, just but I find the club fascinating in terms of its expectations and then the resources that they try and use to get to those expectations. After last week, we even did an extra special podcast because of their victory against Real Madrid, because they were so impressive early on at breaking down a very formidable Real Madrid side that tried to get on the front foot and press high up the pitch, and Valencia exposed them quickly with direct football in behind Los Blancos' defence and get a 2-1 victory in the end, in the midweek. And then this happens this week where they take on Alaves away from home and it all goes wrong. There's just a Jekyll and Hyde to this side. It's almost like we're tired of saying it. But what is the change game to game? What is the difference between midweek and this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see them lose that game after they'd done so well against Real Madrid. But then I'm thinking to myself, why am I surprised? I mean, they've been like this all season. And I was looking before we came on at their Valencia's form. And, you know, when you've got wins in green, draws in amber, losses in red, it looks like a drumstick lollipop. They're just so, like, win, lose, draw. It's just, you just never know what to expect with Valencia. And you almost have to expect the unexpected. So that's why the Alaves loss wasn't too surprising. I suppose we have to give credit to Alaves as well. They have had a really impressive home record. They lost 6-0 to Barcelona, but I think that was maybe they were a little bit tired after their cup exploits and maybe the celebrations as well. But generally, besides that one-off game, they've been really impressive at home. So credit has to go to them. But yeah, maybe Valencia having been in action against Real Madrid and the previous Wednesday night, and what was a very, you know, energetic game, especially in the second half, they really had to hold on against that Real Madrid side. Maybe that just took a little bit too much out of them. But yeah, they're just really hard to read, aren't they?
It's like something changes mentally in them completely. I don't know whether it's the tactics Vara's trying to change every single game to adapt to his opponents, and sometimes it's a hit and sometimes it's a miss. Or if it's just mentally, this side is so kind of away with the fairies 1 minute and then focused in the next, Simon. I mean, there is seemingly no explanation, but they are at least far enough with the victories that they have had recently, particularly the one against Real Madrid, far enough away from the relegation battle now that can we start to say Valencia looks safe?
I would say that they're going to be safe for this season, but more down to the fact that there's just more teams that are worse than them rather than them being particularly good. At the weekend, Ruben Sabrina, when he came on at about the hour mark for Alaves, he sort of changed the game. They couldn't really deal with his direct running, and then João Cancelo just completely switched off for the 2-1. And obviously that comes down potentially to the fact that Martin Montoya, he was out injured. Varo chose to rotate at centre-back. He put in Abdenor instead of Eliku and Mangala. Mario Suarez was awful and was eventually hauled off Renzo Perez. But I think the big absentee was probably Nani. Obviously, he went off against Real Madrid. And although they battled through without him, you know, midweek after he went off, starting a game without him, it wasn't conducive to them creating a great deal. And then later on, you've got Fabian Orellana, probably their other creative player other than Dani Parejo on the field. And he's going to be missing next game because of getting two yellow cards. So it is a strange one with Valencia, but In no way did they deserve to win. I think the fact that they did go ahead, it was almost deceiving, because Alaves, at no point was the game really beyond Alaves, and it just needed Cristian Santos to go off. He was almost, well, generally Alaves fans are quite understanding and they're quite, you know, generous with their praise, but even they were sort of whistling Santos at some points in terms of the fact that he wasn't offering things up front. His touch was quite loose. But Sabrina coming on, it just changed everything. And in truth, Valencia
couldn't really deal with him. And I think it might have been, like you said, maybe sort of the gas ran out in the tank after doing so well against Real Madrid.
It's not the first club that you'll see get a big result one week and then fall away completely the next following it. And perhaps there was just a little bit too much of an adrenaline come down after the victory against Real Madrid in midweek. Let's leave it there for the look back on the weekend. Of course, Betis and Sevilla played out a thrilling Seville derby, to Sevilla winning 2-1, staying in third place, just 2 points off Barcelona, 3 points off Real Madrid, who have a game in hand over both of those at the top of the La Liga table. Atletico Madrid sat in fourth at the moment, only 1 point though above Real Sociedad and Villarreal, Athletic Club Bilbao and Eibar even throwing their name into the hat. Those two just 1 point off Villarreal in sixth place. That final Europa League spot could be very interesting indeed. Let's leave it there for this week, gentlemen. Really appreciate you joining us on the show. Simon, big thanks to you as always, mate. You seem to be a pretty much a regular fixture on this on the podcast, mate. So thanks for the time as always, fella.
Well, when there's so much to talk about and so many twists and turns every week, it's hard to say no, really, isn't it?
As long as you keep that attitude, mate, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Ewan, big thanks to you as well, mate. Always a pleasure, never a chore to chat with you, despite the Scottish jokes. I'm sure you take it all in good humour, or at least I hope you do.
Always. I'll be thinking of some more Oscar jokes for next week.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, boys. Until next week, remember to get on Marker in English. That's Marker in English, all one word, all lowercase. Just type that into Twitter and you can find us on there. Of course, marker.com/en, marker.com/en for Simon, Ewan and everybody else from the podcast. Fine written words as well, of course, getting them on the podcast every week. And of course, get onto Audio Boom and iTunes. Type in I on La Liga or Marker in English, I on La Liga, and you'll be able to find us and subscribe, rate, like and review the podcast. That's all for 7 days. Perhaps if there's some thrills and spills in midweek, we may just have to have another bit of extra time. But until the next one, have a very good day and enjoy the football.